everybody. Welcome to Pockets. This is the podcast where we explore the pockets of movies and life. And I am Jennifer Miller, joined by the wonderful Fabian Ojeda. How are you, darling?
I'm good. Hi, everybody. Hi, Jen.
We're a little fatigued once again. Last week we were too. Maybe it's the time of year or something.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're here to entertain. And we're going to...
Ourselves. For sure.
Exactly. Are you... No, I was just going to say something terrible. I will not do that. So...
Not yet.
Exactly. So, guys, we don't really have much banter. We bantered before we started.
Yeah, we... You know what? There's chocolate-covered berries sitting in
berries
front of me.
Trader Joe's.
Once we get those things going and a little bit of our new gin that we're having today, it's gray whale gin.
Yes.
It's made with Californian botanicals. It's got sea kelp from Mendocino and mint from Santa Cruz, almonds from the Central Valley. I mean, it's amazing. It's incredible.
It's incredible.
Juniper from Big Sur, limes from Temecula, because that's
juniper.
Where you get it. And fir tree. And it's delicious. I really like it.
Yeah,
it's
I like it.
It's kind of strong,
but we're going to have to take it slow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am having a pretty good week. My nephew came to visit, which was wonderful.
Yeah, I heard that
and
was great.
And we had Peter's cousin here last night who attends Westmont for some spaghetti and meatballs for dinner. That was really fun. He's lovely. Gosh.
But he doesn't talk about astrology.
He does.
No Westmont student knows anything about astrology.
They have the giant...
cross?
No, the thing that can see in space. Telescope.
Where?
Telescope. On Westmont, they have a giant telescope.
They do?
Yes.
I did not know this.
I thought that was your joke. Oh, my gosh.
No, because they don't know about astronomy. A lot of Westmont students are very Christian. And when you talk about astrology, astrology, not astronomy, they think you're talking about the devil. So.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they have the giant freaking telescope.
That's astronomy. That they believe in, no problem.
I see. Okay. Yeah, astrology as opposed
God
to astronomy.
God made all of the stars and all of everything. Right. But astrology is the work of the devil.
Well, he did tell me something really interesting. He said that early on, like maybe 2020, 2021, Prince Harry was using the...
telescope?
God. No.
The what?
He was running in the...
the track?
Yes. And the security guard kicked him out.
Wow.
The president of the college then sent an apology to Harry, saying it was a mistake, and Harry never went back. But the security, and Caleb said that they never kick anyone out. Like, everyone can go there. Not everyone, but people that live nearby go and run on the track, and they're never kicked out. So I was like, do you think he knew that it was Prince Harry? And he's like, I don't know, but... I just thought that was very interesting that Westmont freaking kicked out.
Well, I know that they also, besides astrology, they don't like redheads. No. What did we call them? Firebush.
Fire crotch. Oh, I love that you fire keep crotch. Saying bush. And God forbid if he's left-handed, which I think that's William, but you know, everything left-handed is the devil too.
You know this about... Who's left-handed of those two brothers?
Well, you can see William sign things, and it's with his left
Who
hand.
Who watches him sign things?
Me and Jereen, my friend.
Oh, my God, you guys. Wow.
I know. Hmm. Hey, look, we all have what we love.
It's true.
You love, you know.
Farrah Fawcett. She was right-handed.
No, the guy that Max knows that you were just telling me about.
Thomas Finland. We'll come back to that.
You're going to revisit.
We'll come back to that.
We're going to start, guys, with interesting stories from around the world. You know, we take things current day or even from history. And if you have small children, you might want to remove them from the room, as this is not the cleanest of podcasts this time.
True, but I mean, we're just talking about anatomy. It's not a big deal. But this is scientific, and it's cultural and scientific. It's just to inform us and you, the listener. It just came up in a conversation about penis size and... you know, how in art, smaller penises were the norm for different centuries. And so it made me wonder about that. So the history of the preference for penis size through the ages is a complex topic that intersects with various cultural, societal, and historical attitudes toward sexuality, masculinity, and the human body. There's ancient civilizations, for example, where the Greeks and the Romans, smaller penises were often idealized in art and literature, reflecting a cultural preference for moderation and intellect over physical or sexual prowess. Amazing how that has changed. Mm. Larger penises were sometimes associated with foolishness, lust, that and is ugliness.
Like women with big boobs, they don't have a brain, you know, that, you know, they're stupid. People assume.
Well, they don't have a brain, right? No.
If I only had a brain. No, I'm kidding. Go on, you bastard.
Classical, I'm kidding. Classical antiquity, for example, which I don't see how is that different. Greek and Roman statues typically depict men with small, flaccid penises, symbolizing a focus on the aesthetic of the male form.
That's right, it. Rather than making it sexual. Sure. Right.
Then by the Middle Ages, Renaissance era, the emphasis in art and literature shifted slightly, but explicit discussion or depiction of genital size remained relatively taboo. It wasn't until the modern era, the 20th and 21st centuries, that there was a huge shift. One, we had science, so we were understanding human anatomy, including the penises, a little bit better. So there's been an increasing focus on physical attractiveness and sexual compatibility as components of romantic relationships, leading to more open discussion about penis size. Mm-hmm. But contemporary views now, things have changed a lot, I think, because we have a lot more media. We have pornography. Mm-hmm. It's much more accessible. And
accepted, actually, in a way.
And accepted, yeah. Of course. So, and I think that, I mean, I could be wrong, but in pornography, it is usually both with women's breasts, with men's penises, the bigger the better, because it's just a exaggerated version of what regular people have, and it makes sense to sell it, but it also puts in a lot of insecurities for people, thinking that they can't match up to that and they can't, you know, be that way. And you know, being a gay man, I've seen that, you know. My introduction to everything in the 70s, really, when I was still in high school. Even I was in high school in the 80s, but what I witnessed was kind of from the 70s, and it was the bigger the better. Everything had to be big.
Right.
And there was an artist in particular, Tama Finland, who was Finnish, incredible artist starting in World War II, who did beautiful sketches of men, and then they started to get more and more sexual and bigger size. And he was the Patrick Nagel, so to speak. Oh. If you remember Patrick Nagel in the 80s. What Patrick Nagel was for the 80s.
Oh my gosh. He was for gay men. I haven't heard that name.
For decades.
Okay.
And so I loved comic books growing up. And then my introduction to, you know, Tama Finland was like, wow, it's comic books with big beefcake men with giant crotches, you know, and it stuck. It stuck.
It kind of stuck. Yeah,
but that's kind of how it works. But
well, I like it, what it says here. It's important to note that while societal preferences and ideals can influence individual perceptions, sexual satisfaction and compatibility are determined by a multitude of factors.
It's not the girth. It's not the. It's not the size that matters. It's the what is that? It's the movement. What was it? Oh, there's a saying about it. It's what you do with it. It could be anything.
I just read that the majority of women prefer average size.
Of course.
Do you remember the Sex and the City episode when Samantha was dating the guy with the giant? Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, he's like, are you, she was like, I'm ready. Or he's like, are you ready? And she thought it was already like, I ruined that. William Dafoe, I sent this to you today.
This is crazy.
He was in a movie called Antichrist, and the director had to cut the scene of Dafoe's actual penis and reshoot it with a body double because it was so large that it confused everyone in the room, quote unquote.
That is insane.
I never knew that about William Dafoe.
I don't know how I didn't know about that, because I know about all of them.
But it does go to, I kind of want to go back to in the beginning. Oh, gosh. Larger penises were sometimes associated with foolishness, lust, and ugliness. It's interesting because I feel like that even when in 2009, he edited that out so as not to either offend or...
But I don't think it's the same things. I think it's... If somebody has a large penis and you're watching an actor, that's all you're going to think about that actor is, wow, look at that penis. We don't live in a time where we see so many people nude all the time and
we see a variety
of genitalia to know what to compare to.
We have a mutual friend who was robbed one night. And Peter and my me and my German Shepherd, Alibar, the greatest dog that ever lived. No offense, Harvey Korman. We went over to her house. She called us and she's like, I just been robbed. And we went over and we had Alibar go through the house. And then the sheriff came and we were all sitting at like the dining room table. And the sheriff was like standing against the buffet. And I am not kidding you. I was saying to myself, is he wearing like a piece? Like, he walked out of the room and the first thing I said was, am I the only one that noticed the size of that man's penis?
Oh my God, I think I need a Kleenex. Am I slobbering? Am I drooling? Because that is Peter, my dream.
And Peter and my friend were like, yeah, no, we noticed it too. It
wow.
We still laugh to this day.
Wow. Here in Santa Barbara?
Here in Santa Barbara. An older, how long balding ago? Man. Like, he wasn't, you know.
Wow.
But the size was... It was impressive. It was wow, impressive.
That's great.
I never thought to look at the hands or feet because that always also coincides. No,
yeah, I'm. You never know, though. You know what?
He could be a grower, not a shower.
Sometimes the yeah. skinny boys.
Yeah.
I speak from
really?
Experience. I don't mean me specifically.
Who subsists on I six guess crackers I could at just lunch? Say... God bless you. I'm sending you home with lunch for tomorrow.
The skinny boys that you just look at and you think, yeah, they're. When I met Dave, I'm just going to say it. When I met Dave, we were dating for a while. When he'd come over to my apartment, I'd be listening to music. He'd come in, stand at the doorway, and I would have to say to him, do you have a roll of quarters in your pocket? And he would just give me this very embarrassed smile. So, yeah, you never know.
I love it.
The meekest sometimes
I know.
Have the biggest roar.
But it is funny. Like, I posted the other day, and I thought it was just so wonderful and funny. It was a bunch of nuns in Rome at the Statue of David. Not Rome. I think he's in Florence, right? I can't remember where the Statue of David
is. There is one in Florence, yeah.
And she's got the selfie stick, and they all have their habits yeah, on, yeah. and they're all smiling. And, yeah. like...
That's great.
It's hilarious.
But that's another
but that
thing
goes
societal,
to the point
for
about
sure.
The artwork and, yeah. and the different time periods.
But it's also
and...
societal. A nun would never have done this 200 years
oh
ago.
Oh, my gosh.
100
no.
years ago. It's we live in.
Some kind of wayward
we do,
nun.
We're evolving. We do. We yeah. are evolving and we are getting better about stupid stuff like this.
I hope so, Fabe.
I
don't
so.
Know. Like, you know,
well,
women
know.
Are still. Women are still perceived differently if
well,
you have larger
I know. I like to
breasts.
Think that we're evolving and then you have. Things that are going on in Alabama that are just
I
fucking
can't. Don't
shocking.
Even get me.
I know.
It's,
I don't want to.
It's not horrible. Obviously, it's not affecting you or me. But I have friends that, you know, have tried
to,
IVF and.
To, but it's crazy that.
Religious
this
beliefs
is happening
are affecting
now.
Rights
this
of people.
Religious
that have
nationalism
beliefs.
Is yeah. out of control. It is
and
crazy.
We don't share their beliefs, and yet they're able to control our lives.
Correct.
It's insane. To
it
me.
Is insane.
It really is. So. We know how to really bring the room down. We're going to bring it down further. The next subject is, let's determine the saddest movie ever made. I know. Which, of course, we all know. Movies, they're very subjective.
It's subjective
very
for
subjective.
Sure.
Individual emotional responses. Fabian did a search on AI to look for the saddest movies, which of course is nowhere near my list, or I'm sure
or
his
mine.
Personal list.
But it is a correlation.
Although
of...
a few are, it is yeah
yeah
a few are like Grave of the Fireflies. We haven't watched as it's an animated film showing the struggles of two siblings during World War II in Japan, and it's frequently cited for its emotional depth.
And this is all based on critics. It's a
yeah,
correlation
right,
of
yeah.
critics and Rotten Tomatoes and people,
that's right.
people's
reviews. And, exactly.
So this is what came up as the top
exactly.
six. And I think a lot of people will agree with a lot of these.
Yeah, I mean Schindler's List. When you
oh
when
God.
That girl in the pink
destroyed
coat
me.
When the
that
pink
red,
coat
that
showed
red,
up. Yeah, the red coat.
Yeah. That was no, that was a very sad
unbelievable.
Movie.
Unbelievable. I never saw Titanic. I don't want to hear it. I have no interest.
I don't care. You know what?
She should have left him. She should have let him on the raft.
I'm telling you, it's the most... Titanic is not one of the greatest movies
Thank
of all
you.
Time. It is not. I saw
that's
it at the
I
movies,
feel.
And of course you're very moved, but it's very manipulative.
Yeah,
oh
that's.
My God.
I saw it 10 miles away. No
yeah,
interest.
Yeah.
The Green Mile, wonderful.
It was a great movie.
Yeah. Manchester by the Sea did totally break me. Like, I was really crying at that movie. Just the saddest. I don't know if did you see it. Do you remember?
I did, but I cannot recall.
Remember his children died in the fire
oh
tragically.
My God.
And yeah. and Michelle
Williams.
Williams, who, you know, yeah. we have yeah. thing about her.
She's Gwyneth Paltrow number two to me. So that's a whole
I'm
other.
Kind of there too. Yeah. But he was good, although not a huge fan. Actually, the actors I'm not a huge fan of, but the movie itself was really good. These films are known for their ability to evoke deep emotional responses, often due to the powerful storytelling, compelling characters, and the universal themes of loss, love, guilt, redemption. I can tell you this.
What about you, personally?
Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. I know that it's not a very popular film. It is lovely. It is a fable, obviously. Isabella Rossellini plays the grandmother of Marcel. Did you see
it? I watched it, yeah.
When he, the tears,
I love Isabella Rossellini. Tears, it's funny you're mentioning her.
When his tears were hitting the floor when he was talking about her after. Guys, you won't be sorry. I know on my social media I have mentioned Marcel the Shell a lot, but it's really worth the watch. The other day, Faye, by accident, I caught Remains of the Day. And I got to tell you, the absolute subtlety, the brilliance of that movie are the subtleties.
Yeah.
Him reading the book and her wanting to see what he's reading and him not wanting to show her. And it's a simple romantic book. His father dying, but yet he's going to go buttle, as they say, be the butler, while his father dies, because that's the ethic that his father instilled in him.
Do you know who wrote this book?
No.
It's a Japanese author. He's Japanese-British, but he's Japanese, and every book he writes is incredible. He's my mother's second favorite author, and that's the only reason I know.
Do you know it?
I've ordered so many books for her, I should know it.
Oh my gosh, Fabian, it is so special.
I think just about every one of his books have been made into films, maybe two that haven't.
Well, I just thought it's just wonderful. You know,
it's Kazuo Ishiguro. Kazuo Ishiguro.
Wow. Well, he's amazing.
He's amazing.
And I have to say, it's been many years since that movie came out. But guys, you won't be sorry. It holds up. Go revisit it. Another one for me, Fabe, is I Remember Mama. Do you remember that one? I think that's the name of it.
With whom?
Oh, gosh. I should make it.
With whom?
Dorothy McGuire plays the mother. Or is it? No. Oh, my gosh. Now I have to confirm.
Well, while you're confirming, yes. I'm going to tell you.
Yes. Tell me.
For me, and I think I've talked about it already on here, but I think Juliette Binoche in Blue is the most heart-wrenching character and movie in my library. I absolutely love how sad that movie makes me. It's beautiful. Go ahead.
I'm coming close to the microphone. I can agree with you. No, Fabian, from the beginning to end, when she's in the hospital after she realizes what happens, when she pulls the blue pearls from the wind chime, when she pours the coffee over the vanilla ice cream when she's at the cafe, that entire movie, I can't agree more.
Me too.
When she grabs that
lollipop, she unwraps that blue lollipop
and crunches it
because she's trying to just absorb
that.
I had
the same response to
this movie. The underwater scenes, and she's trying so hard to shut everything up. She's trying to shut the world off, and the music keeps coming, and it comes, and it comes.
And then you find out that she's
a composer.
Wrote the music.
It's an amazing.
It's really amazing. It's part of a trilogy: white, red, and blue.
Yeah,
but blue, in my opinion, is
the best
of them
for sure. For sure, but she's also incredible. And I may have said this already in The English Patient. Her character Hannah, in The English Patient, a nurse who's caring for the English patient.
When she is on the...
Oh my God, in that tiny church, and Kip is holding her and swinging her back and forth, and she's holding a lantern to see the artwork.
I know.
It is the most beautiful... That movie is filled with beautiful, beautiful moments.
I agree with
moments.
You.
It's one of the most beautiful films ever made, truly.
Yeah.
And if you watch Seinfeld, they hated it. And there was a whole episode on Seinfeld about it.
I know.
I couldn't believe it. I was
so
mad.
It was a funny episode, though.
Elaine
was really funny. I hate it, remember? No.
Oh, I love that movie.
It was, I agree with you. I absolutely loved it. I think it was beautiful.
I loved it so much.
Who was the blonde? It wasn't Kate Blanchett, was it?
Kristen Scott Thomas.
That's it.
They were all nominated for an Oscar, but Juliette Binoche won for it.
Yeah,
she won Best Supporting Actress for it.
And then, that whole movie.
Willem Dafoe, big dick Willem Dafoe was in it, too. He played Caravaggio.
Wouldn't it be great if we could have him come on the podcast?
He was a spy, remember? remember? Yeah, he had his thumbs cut off.
Oh, my God, yes.
It was an amazing.
Yes, he was, oh, my God. Yeah. And Ray Fiennes was, oh, God, I got it bad for that guy. I mean, I love my husband at all.
But no, I agree. Not like Rafe is gonna all like, of them, though, they were
Jen Miller so likes good. Me. I'm going right to her. All right. When I say I Remember Mama, I'm talking about a movie, guys, from 1948. You don't run to see it. But Irene Dunn stars as the mother. And it's about this family in New York who are dirt poor. And the mother, they're Swedish or something. And the mother just works her ass off and is constantly bolstering the dad. And the daughter is smart enough to get to college. And
this is sounding like Mildred Pierce.
She has to write an essay. And the mother's like, write about your father, write about your father. And the whole movie is like her bolstering the daughter to write about the father. And at the end, she gets into this amazing college.
And you find out that the essay
was... I remember the street signs of New York. And I remember the butcher. And I remember this. And I remember that. But most of all, I remember Mama.
Hence...
I could cry right now. Wow. It's that sad. Like, you're crying.
Is she dead at the end?
No, she's listening to her daughter read it. It's so lovely, guys.
That's great.
Old movie, I Remember Mama. Here's one just for me.
This is the antithesis of Mildred Pierce, where she has the horrible daughter.
I hate Joan Crawford. That kills, I'm not a fan.
But the story is incredible. And you don't have to watch the Joan Crawford one. Watch the Kate Winslet Mildred Pierce miniseries on HBO.
Okay, I'll do that.
Oh my God.
Oh, wait, it's really because I really don't like Joan.
No,
Crawford.
No, no.
This and not is, just because of the Wire actors.
No, no. Watch the Kate Winslet one is a masterpiece.
All right.
She is phenomenal.
Everything
Everyone
she
is
does
so
is
good
phenomenal.
In it. She's, don't miss it. Okay. It is a really
All right,
good
I'm
one.
I'm going to watch that, it's a good babe. One. So Ricky Schroeder starred in a movie.
I can't stand him. He's the Gwyneth Paltrow of men. He's worse.
Well, he is. But remember when he was younger, and this is even worse because you're right, the cast, John Voight, it was
the two of them deserve each other.
The champ.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever?
Yeah.
But
it was
we didn't
that was
know
a,
better. We didn't
know.
Know better
of
then.
Of course.
So
at that time,
me.
That was
so
a tearjerker.
My father was a gorilla of a man. Huge Bronx, big handlebar mustache. He had his chair that he sat in. The champ is on. We're all watching it. The credits roll. I'm already dead. And I'm probably 8 years old, by the way. I run to the bathroom.
Were so you
like,
shocked to see your father?
And my father, I could hear my father. And he comes to get tissues out of the bathroom. And I just open the door and hold the tissue out of the bathroom.
You're both too embarrassed to see each other. You're both too.
And he, and I remember my dad laughing and laughing and laughing. That's
that you were
why
both
I
crying? That's
yes.
The best.
It was a sweet memory.
That
I had
is
to share that.
Sweet.
So I agree. The two actors suck.
That
but
is
the
so
memory
sweet.
I have. My dad, seeing my dad laugh through tears, that was the only time
That's
in my
beautiful.
Life I saw that. So
That's
that was
beautiful.
Really nice.
That's beautiful. You know, my family had a very similar thing, but for us it was Little House on the Prairie. That TV show we would watch as a family and the episode.
And you'd never let each other know that you this, were crying.
Oh no, this one, there was no denying it. That when the School for the Blind burned down. Oh my God. I mean, we were, I don't think anyone in my family spoke until the next morning. We were just devastated. Devastated. Oh, poor Mary. She lost her baby.
We were so not in touch with our feelings in the
70s. Yeah.
No.
Don't cry out loud. No. Just keep it inside and learn how to hide your feelings. That was the epitome. Melissa Manchester? Who
was
that?
I was just going to say, Melissa Manchester. Don't cry out loud. All right. We won't sing.
That's good advice. Keep
what
it inside.
What else do you have movie-wise? As far as sadness.
Okay, I think we can both agree on this. And it caught me by surprise. I went to the movie theater to see Dangerous Liaison, sold out. My friend and I ended up getting tickets to go in Century City to see
the makeup off.
Beaches.
Oh, we talked about this, I think, last
did we?
Time.
Oh, my
I
God.
I think we did.
No. I left there. I left that a wreck, and also the color purple, which I went to see with a friend, and I was humiliated. No. At how much my throat hurt from trying to...
You were a shell of a man because, right?
Not to cry
no,
out loud.
I know.
Don't cry out loud. Seriously. I was trying to keep
we
it inside.
We had the same response.
I wanted
to
hide my feelings.
The color purple, you're right. That the knot in
God.
Your throat with that one.
That was
when she turns to him, I may be dumb. I may be this, but
I'm intense.
I know. Yeah. I almost regret that they redid it. I know they have to redo freaking everything, except they even redid Breakfast at Tiffany's, didn't they, those bastards?
They did?
Jennifer Love Hewitt, or was she just playing Audrey?
Fuck off. No, she was playing Audrey. Okay,
they won't dare. They won't dare. Don't. Just like they won't dare with Judy Garland.
I think they should redo things, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, but
you know why?
Certain things.
There are some things that I like them redoing because when they're miniseries or whatever, the times change and people evolve and things that were maybe taboo now can be really addressed. And I think that that's a positive. Like, I think with Breakfast at Tiffany's, you'd really get more of a idea of her being more of a call girl. Or
well, it was like Damage when we both agreed that the redo of that with, what's his name? The one that was in Richard Armitage.
Yeah.
You got a lot more of the character.
Sure. I really think that I have no problem with remakes. I don't. When it's something, when it's a mini series or something and they're adding extra stuff. I'm like, good with it.
Yeah. Thornbirds. Like, I could see, like, who would play a great Rachel Ward and Richard Chamberlain? And
Wait a minute.
Gene Simmons
was
the mother.
Oh, my God. Wait, Barbara Stanwyck.
And her and
was
her
she
dentures.
In Thornbirds?
Do you remember her dentures?
I thought that this was
remember
Shogun.
Bad for...
I thought it was Shogun. I'm like, why is Barbara Stanwyck in Shogun?
No.
Because she's still in love. Yes. They showed a clip of it the other day. She was in love with the priest. I'm like, was he a priest in Shogun in Japan?
Yes.
I never saw either. I never saw either one.
Oh, my God, Fabian.
No. All right.
All right. We're going to wrap it up shortly, but Ordinary People. Can we talk about that?
No. Ordinary People.
Which I think
how did I forget it?
I think Judd Hirsch in the raincoat.
You killed
over.
Me. No, you know what you've just done? You have done something that I've probably spent decades putting away out of my mind because it devastated me so deeply.
Timothy Hutton's sadness. Mary Tyler Moore's coldness.
Mary Tyler Moore. No, but Mary Tyler Moore, the scene at the golf, when they're playing golf.
I know.
When she's talking to her sister or sister-in-law about the pool. Oh, my God.
Donald Sutherland's sadness.
Every single bit of that movie.
One.
The music.
What's her name?
The music.
Yeah.
Elizabeth McGovern.
That's it. Thank you.
The music. Paco Bell's Canon. I'll never forget it because it changed everything.
I know.
That was, you know, Robert Redford directed that movie. It was a fucking amazing movie.
Guys, if we're repeating, you blame it on the gin. He was on the beach in Malibu watching the sunset. Mary Tyler Moore walks by. And she was deep in thought in life, of her own life. And he looked at her and he said, that's
you're
who
the
I'm
going
to cast.
That's her.
Because he saw her outside of the Mary Tyler
Moore
image.
Sure, because she really, this was so unexpected.
Oh, my God.
No
and
one
she
expected
was so
her.
But
she
I,
was
well, we must
so
also,
good.
Donald Sutherland. But Judd Hirsch in the raincoat.
Yeah.
Remember when Timothy Hutton's having the breakdown?
I wanted a Judge
Hirsch.
And what
was the one wrong thing that you did?
Oh, my God.
I held on.
Yeah. Oh, that was just,
just crying and crying.
Oh, that movie. But you know what's really, what does this say about me? That movie I saw when it came out on cable, it's the 80s. This was my sister was in high school, 1982.
Right.
This, I would watch it every day. I would watch it regularly.
I think that's why we're both sitting here together.
Yeah.
Every time it was on,
I would watch it,
and I would never be tired of it. I knew all the lines.
Me too.
And I cried.
Me too.
Deeply. And the knot in my throat, the lump in the throat, would be
me too
till the very end. Yeah. And Judd would eventually make me cry because I don't know what the one wrong thing that I did in my life, but it just spoke to me.
Yeah,
it
they
really
were all
did.
Amazing. They were so freaking
last
good.
One I want to mention, and it might have just been the mood. I was in Wisconsin with my dear friends Lisa and Tom, but A Man Called Otto, which is actually a remake of A Man Called Ove, which is a Swedish movie. There's something about that movie. It is not formulaic. It really isn't. Tom Hanks is amazing in it, but it hits the notes in a way that I did cry hard.
I have not seen it.
It's
I don't
really
know
good.
Why I
it's really
have it.
Lovely.
My friend Barbara did the production design for it. Oscar-winning friend Barbara did the production design for
it. You should watch it with Dave. Right. It's really, really good. And then I'm so sorry. I need to mention two other things. I think I'm dominating this segment.
Not at all.
I live in the deep end of the pool. Station 11, science fiction. Or wait, maybe not science fiction. It's actually,
is this the one with the traveling show?
No, this is the one where it's like the apocalyptic thing, and the guy takes care of the girl, and the like, everything's kind of done.
Wait, is it the one where they're in a skyscraper, and then later on she becomes?
Yes,
I've been told by so many people that it is absolutely phenomenal.
That is it. That is it.
And
the devastating flu.
I watched the first episode, and I don't know what, something shut me down, and I couldn't finish it.
Peter, the last episode, it was like nothing Peter ever witnessed. It was like nothing that ever happened to me, including ordinary people. I was bent in half.
Oh my God.
Weeping.
That's what my friend Sydney said. Same thing.
Watch it. The actor that plays the guy that takes care of her, he just slays you. Station 11, really good stuff.
I know,
stuff.
I've heard it was great. But you know what? You're reminding me then, what about The Last of Us? The Last of Us.
Also great, but nothing like, to me.
Really?
It really wonderful.
Last of Us,
I'm not going to diminish.
Devastated me.
It was amazing.
I can handle
that
much.
Freaking good.
Okay, I'm going to watch it.
And again, it's all subjective, Fave.
No.
Subjective, but
someone who I really, really trust, Sydney, I hope you're listening, told me this was one of the greatest things.
I'm telling you, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Finally, Wanderlust. Not the Jennifer Aniston movie, but this instead is a series with Toni Collette on Netflix, where a couple, they're kind of stagnant in the bedroom, and they decide to sleep with other people, but then, or date other people, or, and I can't remember if they actually go all the way, but then they come back and their sex life is reinvigorated. But on the there's six episodes. On the fifth episode, it's just Toni Collette at her therapist's office.
I think I saw this.
And the therapist gets her. Remember,
Toni
didn't take the phone call to the man that killed himself. She's a therapist. And the whole episode is the therapist trying to draw out of her.
Yeah.
And when she does the ugly face cry, Toni.
Well.
And, of course, my father had died like 3 months before I watched this. So, and I wasn't able to really like cry that hard. And, like, so maybe it was. Grief speaks to you,
flowing.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I just feel like it's a really special show.
I would watch Toni Collette do anything.
Anything. Use a toothpick after a meal. I would watch her.
I would watch her floss. Yes. I don't care. I'd watch it. No, that woman is incredible.
I agree. Is there anything else you want to add? Because I really feel I dominated
I'm
that
telling
whole...
you, sad movies, I could do this all day long because they're my
a
favorite.
More,
No.
I dominated.
It's my favorite.
We have time.
It's my favorite thing. I could talk about sad movies all day long. Sad shows, sad movies. Those are absolutely my favorite.
Hello.
I think it's because we can discuss why. Why do we love those movies so much?
What is it, babe? What is it that they...
Does it go back to what we were talking about a week ago with tears and with the idea of
it's our way of expressing...
Of draining this...
Yeah.
Like it's like a purging of emotion.
Emotions.
And sometimes maybe it helps us get in touch with, even if it's subconscious and it's not what is bringing us down or what might be upsetting us in the moment.
Right.
It helps to, our bodies maybe interpret it that way, and we're sort of processing whatever trauma or something that we've not been dealing with.
Right.
And it helps us sort of get through it.
And it's funny when you least expect it, do you remember the Hallmark commercials or the Christmas commercials with the Clydesdales? Like, why do they, it's
those
music,
tiny
and
things.
Music has so much to do with it.
Right.
Like you were saying with the Ordinary People, Canon.
The Pucklebell Canon.
Canyon. it just, you hear the music and it just...
But you see the Pucklebell Canon, if I had heard it for the first time, I would think this is a beautiful piece. But the first time I heard it was because of this film. And that's why, to me, when I hear it, I associate this sadness and this really...
Right.
Because I don't think... It's a joyful piece, if you think about it.
Oh,
it's joyful, but I associate this sadness because of
the... movie Gloria. Do you remember Gloria with Jenna Rollins? And that little boy...
Of all time,
ever.
She's in one
Did
of the
John
greatest.
Is direct? I don't know.
One of the greatest performances of all
of
time.
Of all time,
she was.
God bless Sharon Stone. She didn't touch it. Gloria.
No comparison.
No, Jenna Rollins was insane.
She was amazing.
And also like the '70s and was it the
all
Bronx?
Of it? It was so real.
So real.
The closest thing I've ever seen to someone getting to Gina Rollins in this film was Angelica Houston in The Grifters. This toughness, yeah, the survival. I agree with that. There's a survival instinct.
Raw.
Yeah.
Like mob, like.
Totally. Mob, you're not going to fuck with me.
And it was like, wasn't it the Bronx, if I recall?
Yeah,
like,
it was. I remember the Bronx in the
70s.
Yeah.
And his polyester shirt.
All of it.
Remember?
Her, and him
yelling at her.
Outfit, and the whole thing. He was Puerto Rican, right? Yeah. A little Puerto Rican kid.
And then
he was
at the
great.
End, when he's at the cemetery, and she pulls up, talk about...
watching
that
so
over and over.
I have to watch it again. It's been a few months. No, it's been a couple of years. I need to see that again.
Again.
It's a good one.
But we can do a little more. We have time. Is there any other one you want to mention? I know. My list is not really what I wanted it to be.
I think that if I was going to say something, I just happened to watch Spaceman with Adam Sandler, brand new. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, how is it?
It has that sadness. There's a sadness to it. It's sci-fi, and you think it's just going to be sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not unlike Gravity or Solaris.
Oh.
Three movies. These are three movies that take place in space.
Right.
But they could just as easily take place on a Tahitian island. They could take place anywhere. They just happened to take place in space.
Right.
Beautiful movie. I loved it. And it's about loss and about emotion and about
which it's
dealing
every human
or not
has
dealing.
This. Every
All those
human
three movies.
It.
Seriously, people think, oh, Gravity is just going to be special effects and it's just Sandra Bullock trying to, escape.
Yeah.
But when you listen to her and you listen to the character and the reason why she's in space, the loss that she had, the losing her child, it's not unlike Blue. This is someone who is like Juliette Binoche, trying to deny it and push it away. And suddenly something sparks and it forces her to suddenly love life again. Solaris is the same thing. And Solaris with George Clooney, which was a remake of an old Russian movie.
Right.
Beautiful film.
Right.
Steven Soderbergh in one of Viola Davis's first movies. I think it might have been her second or third. She was in all of Steven Soderbergh's films.
She was
spectacular in this movie. She had... she might have been in it 10 minutes
this
at the most.
This is the Solaris. Okay.
She destroys you. She is
She's Viola
spectacular.
Doubt. Did you ever see Doubt?
Of course.
She
of course.
Destroys you.
She
Remember
destroys
when she's
you.
Crying?
Oh, yeah.
To
oh,
Meryl
my God.
Streep,
the
nun. The snot,
all of it.
Who mastered a Bronx accent better than anyone I've ever seen in my life.
Well, she should.
But she had it down, Faye, the dialect. But that scene when she was crying to her, oh my gosh. No, Viola Davis, there's nothing to say. She's quintessential, perfect.
She is
the
best of the best.
She is.
Of her
really
generation,
is.
For
agree.
Sure. She deserves every accolade she's gotten.
The Help, the one that had the miscarriages, that lovely actress.
Jessica Chastain, no.
I thought that was a sad scene and lovely.
You know, I'm not a fan of the movie at all.
Okay.
Not even a little bit.
Because
I really
of the
had
topic
a lot of
or because of
I just didn't I had a hard time with
Okay.
with it was really The Help were really just, in my opinion, used to highlight the white people. It wasn't really about The Help.
Oh, I disagree.
I didn't feel like that at all. I felt it was just they were used as
I respect
a
that.
as a vehicle show how great or how horrible people were.
They in my opinion more horrible other than Jessica Chastain's role.
Yeah. Wasn't Emma Stone
the redemption of Jenny?
Emma Stone. Wasn't she in that? Emma Stone was in that.
She's
Wasn't she the main?
She's the one that's writing all about them.
Yeah.
And her mother is Jenny.
Was it?
What's her name?
Howard?
Mom?
Not.
What is
not,
it?
Not Dallas Howard, whatever. Wasn't she in
no.
that too?
Oh, yeah. She was the asshole in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's not a movie I'd go back and watch again. It's
all
really
right.
weird.
But
Viola
did cry.
Davis was
But I
great.
Did cry in Jessica when she lost that baby.
Jessica
again.
Chastain. Don't get me started. That woman is amazing.
She's meticulously beautiful.
She is.
And she's a good actress.
She's an amazing actress. Don't get me started with Interstellar. Interstellar, to me, is one of the greatest sci-fi... I can't believe
really?
We didn't talk about it before.
Or The Matrix. By the way, we never brought up the freaking Matrix.
To me, Interstellar might be... top three science fiction movies ever, ever made. Beautiful, perfect, kind of right on, I think, scientifically. I think a lot of scientists agree with a lot of the theories that they use in it.
It's amazing. More earthbound, right, than spacebound?
No, it's all space.
Yeah, I don't like the spacebound science.
Anne Hathaway was so good in it. Matthew McConaughey.
Anne Hathaway is gorgeous.
You guys, I'm telling you, Interstellar is one of the most beautiful films. God, it destroys me. Ellen Burstyn plays.
Remember,
she's Jessica Chastain in the future. She's older.
No, I don't remember. I never saw it, love.
Oh, thank you so much for tuning in. We are ending
the friendship right now.
Podcast right now. No,
but let me ask you this before we go on to our next segment, the Oscars. Now, I saw Maestro. I didn't see the Emma Stone movie.
I haven't seen it. I can't believe it.
I have friends that say it's the best.
I do too. I'm gonna watch it tonight.
Oppenheimer, but I have to say, like, personally, and maybe I'll change my mind if I do watch it. Maestro, I'm sorry. I was obsessed with Leonard Bernstein growing up. I think he was a regional guy, East Coast. Yeah, I loved him. Yeah.
He was a name on the East Coast. You heard about him all the time.
And you saw him on the news, and he was just always in the paper. And, you know, I thought it was an amazing job.
I loved it.
I don't understand the hate against Bradley Cooper. Like, he's trying to get an Oscar, and it's exhausting. Like, he did an incredible job.
He's so beautiful. He's such a handsome, beautiful man.
I think it's because of his lovely blue eyes.
He's handsome and beautiful.
He's not only beautiful, but he's beautiful inside. I remember what you told me about what you saw at the Santa Barbara Film Festival.
Pure kindness.
It seems like he's a very kind,
good person.
And people like to shit on that.
They do. People love
because
to shit on
because I just
that.
Feel like enough already. Like, yeah. He's not. He's, Maestro his whole was beautiful. Goal making a movie.
He did which, an. It was
by the
an
way,
amazing
I
movie.
I made like a tiny little documentary, low budget, and it almost broke me. So I don't even know what it's like to make a big feature that you actually have money. It's an exhausting process. So his only goal is to get the Oscar. No, you're all shitheads.
His goal is to make art. Do you know that exactly. he would get there at like 4 a.m. just to have? It was 5 hours of makeup that he'd have to have done.
I'm sure.
So while he's directing, even in the scenes he's not in, he's in makeup.
I know.
He's in full makeup doing. I mean, he was so dedicated. He's amazing.
And I get that it might not be for everybody, but for me, I thought it was a beautiful film. It was really good. And Oppenheimer, I will say one thing. They're all too long. I mean, just bring it down.
All right. I'm going to tell you this. If you're going to watch one film and you can go see it at the movies, it's nominated for Best Foreign Film, Perfect Days. It's the Japanese entry. Do not miss it.
Perfect Days. All right.
We were talking earlier about The Color Purple and the choking up.
Yeah.
We get to the theater. It's playing at the Riviera. Oh. The Riviera Theater is a beautiful, incredible theater here in Santa Barbara. And we get there. We sit down. There's a woman sitting next to me with her husband. And she looked familiar, but we didn't have time to really look because the movie's beginning. We watch the movie. By the end of the movie, the very closing scene, I was so moved.
What's it about, Fabian?
It is about, it's Wim Wenders, who directed my second favorite movie of all time, Wings of Desire, and this movie. He did the Buena Vista Social Club, the documentary about the music in Cuba.
Right.
So this was supposed to be a documentary. They have these toilets, I think it's 17 toilets in Tokyo that are state of the art. They're public restrooms. One of them is the glass that when you close the door, the glass becomes opaque. Another one is this pod that you walk in and the doors swirl. Every one of them is different. They're works of art, each one.
Right.
And they asked Wim Wenders, would you be interested in making a documentary about these toilets?
Right.
He went to Japan. He looks at all this. He's like, I want to make a movie. And he and a Japanese man write a screenplay about a character. And the character is this. The movie follows one man throughout his days as he gets up in the morning, gets ready for work. Very humble man, poor, just has the least amount of anything, gets in his van, drives and cleans toilets all day long. Comes home, has to go to the bath because they don't have baths.
I didn't see that coming. Yeah.
And so the whole thing is, you're beginning to think, I was a little bit embarrassed because I had friends come with me and I had Dave with me and I'm thinking, oh, he's going to hate this. It's like Groundhog Day. It's day three and it's the same routine. You hear the brushing, you know, he gets up in the morning, he goes to the you know, you start to think, okay, is this the whole movie? Little changes happen. Day four, something changes. A new character comes in. A family member shows up. You start seeing little changes and the effect that those changes have on him, because he's a person of routine. And he's not unlike Sandra Bullock's character in Gravity. Someone who is avoiding something, who's chosen a new life, a new way, because they can't deal with the pain that they had in their past. We never find out what that pain is in this film.
Oh, that would be frustrating for me.
Because it can be any one of our pain. Oh, it is the last scene, I don't want to tell you, the last scene, he listens to cassette tape still. He has a cassette tape player in his car. The moment he puts that cassette tape in, after we've seen things happen, he puts the cassette tape in, the very song that comes on that is not cut. They play it from beginning to end, the entire song. A classic, I won't tell you. The look on his face. He won Best Actor at the Cannes Film Festival for this.
Oh my gosh.
He won it for this scene. I'm telling you, this scene where someone has a camera on them as they're driving, and every range of emotion, from joy to sorrow to hope.
Wow.
In one moment.
Yeah.
Is there.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Honey, I'm telling you.
That sounds amazing.
An amazing, beautiful film that makes you love humanity. It makes you love humans and it makes you love this planet. It is a beautiful movie.
Wow, Fabian.
My key word in this is tenderness. This man has the ability to see the tenderness in moments, in everything. And if you are aware of it and watch it, when you're seeing the movie, look for the tenderness between characters. Yeah. It is stunning.
It's like the nuances in Remains of the Day. I love when movies can do
me
that.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely.
What an art.
Oh,
it's
honey.
It's so good.
Thank you. That was beautiful, Fabian.
Do see it. I highly recommend it.
And I think we should both do a shout out for Past Lives, because that was, we both saw that, and that, I want that to win the Oscar too.
I do too. I would kill for that to win the Oscar. I loved it so much.
One of the most
beautiful.
Peter literally looked at me. He was like, that was one of the most beautiful movies
I've
ever seen in my life.
So did Dave.
And these are men that are not like me and Fabian.
Like
yeah, exactly.
It was a beautiful, beautiful
agree.
Movie.
I have to agree.
Yeah. What a film.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Simple. I don't think we need to do the agony and antony.
You say that every time, and we do. We have to stay with our structure.
Okay, then
and
we're going to go. If you haven't seen Past Lives, I cannot recommend it more highly, because that is streaming right now. And please watch it. Please watch it for that final scene. There is a release happens with Greta, the character.
I know.
That is amazing.
It's just truly one of the most beautiful movies that you will ever see in your life. I said to Peter,
I'm in love with
watching that again.
The man. He was
lovely,
beautiful, and lovely.
And so was her husband.
Yeah,
the American husband. Like that's the thing. You know, a lot of times it's easy because there's always an ass in a movie that you can not root for.
Yeah.
Every one of
and
them.
And I expected him to be a dick. I expected him to be jealous and a dick
and he was
just
totally
amazing.
Totally lovely.
But when you watch the main characters, Greta and Theo, look at Theo and never forget that when he last saw her, he was a little boy.
I know.
When you look at it that way and you watch him as an adult,
knowing
that he was a little boy, he's still that little boy.
I know.
And that is really, really touching. It's really beautiful.
It's really touching.
She stopped being that little girl until that final scene.
I know. And their love. Guys, it's really good.
It's really
you
good.
You won't be sorry.
You
Past
won't.
Lives.
Amazing.
All right. Even though Fabian, because I'm getting the vibe that he wants to axe this segment. We have plenty of time. Trust me. This is the portion
this
of
is
the
a good,
show.
Because I think maybe I don't want to do this because this is a this
one
might strike some.
I know.
It's a good, good
one. Well, it's tough. I know. It's hard to get really juicy ones, but
no, this is a really good one, and sometimes they hit a little close to home, so that's what's tough.
In this portion of the show, guys, we use the British term agony auntie and agony uncle, where we respond to anyone seeking advice. As in our previous episodes, we've borrowed these from the internet because every week I log on to the Pockets email and find nothing. Just crickets.
Come on, guys.
Please write
us. Come on.
For anything. Really simple, silly
Write and us. You know what? You could even make a fake if you're.
Yeah,
you
make
can
it
make
up.
A fake. No, you can make a fake email address.
Oh, yeah,
a temporary email
anonymous.
Address.
Yeah.
And send something in if
exactly.
I'm serious.
Exactly, guys. He's right. Yeah, just create like a. Yeah. But basically,
10-minute mail.
To,
there's a 10-minute mail. We'll give you a temporary
yes.
email for 10 minutes that you can send something and we would never know who it was.
Exactly. And the email to submit your questions to is pocketspod@gmail.com. That is pocketspod@gmail.com. Please write in, guys. I'm first up this time around. Dear Agony.
I just want to hear you say this first line. Go for it. I'm ready. Go. I can't wait.
Dear Agony, Auntie, and Uncle, I'm a 24-year-old lesbian.
Ooh.
And I think I've somehow fallen in love with my friend who is a 32-year-old guy. I thought this one was fascinating.
It's a really good one.
Because there's the whole spectrum. Anyway, let me tell you, everybody. I came out at 14, and I have always dated girls. Never in my life have I been attracted to a man until this friend came into the picture. We met 5 years ago through one of my college friends, who now works with him, and we immediately became close. None of his girlfriends have ever had a problem with how close we are because they knew I was a lesbian. And I think that has helped our relationship to grow even stronger. We've never had to deal with the awkwardness of girlfriend versus best friend jealousy, which has been great. But after years of growing closer to him, I've started to realize that I actually do like him more than just a friend. Masculine stuff used to gross me out, but with him, it's completely different. I actually find myself fantasizing about him, even though all the other men turn me off completely. We've both been single for the past few months, and I've been hanging out a lot. When we go out, people always assume we're a couple because of how we act together. But he's never taken it beyond being affectionate. He's always kept it platonic, but still makes me feel really special. He sounds lovely, doesn't he?
He does.
Recently, my extended family threw a big party, so I invited him to come along as my plus one. It was their first time meeting him, and they loved him. I introduced him as my best friend, but we were probably a little too touchy at the party because my mom was giving us some knowing looks. I realized now that I need to have a conversation with him about how I'm feeling, but I have no idea how to go about it. He still sees me as a lesbian, and I'm terrified that he's going to be totally shocked if I tell him how I really feel. I don't want to mess up our friendship, but these feelings just aren't going away. Any advice is welcome from Completely Confused. What do you think?
I think it's so beautiful.
I know.
And I really think there's no way you don't ask him. You don't talk to him about it. I mean, the way this is written, the way that he's so tender and kind and he's had girlfriends, but he's still single. She has to ask. And even if it's a risk of losing that friendship, of ruining it somehow, I think he's in love with her.
He's in love with her.
I do too. I just think that he would never presume to bring. He might be feeling the exact same thing she is, but he won't say it because he's like, "Well, she's a lesbian. I'm not going to do this to her.
But I'm going
to
respect her and be affectionate
with her because I love her.
Right.
I love her as she is.
But let me ask you this, babe: if she really identifies as lesbian, do we worry about him?
She's
because could she eventually go back to how she feels?
No, but
naturally?
No, because who cares? She could feel that same way about another man. If we were to think
true.
That way, any
that's
of us
true.
Could do that.
That's true.
You know, you can't not go into a relationship for something like that because it, you know, I could be gay and I fall in love with a woman and suddenly
like they're made for each other.
It doesn't even matter. I think that I think that their friendship would survive it.
Yeah.
I do. I think that they're
I
so
agree.
Close and they're so and I you know, it's like when Harry met Sally, they'll survive it. And I don't know. My advice to her would absolutely be don't wait another minute.
How would you do it? Would you have her go to lunch and say something to him? Or would you have it be more, there's a fireplace, there's a little wine.
It doesn't matter.
She grabs his crotch.
Could be,
like, how should
no,
she go about
no grabbing
it?
The crotch. She should just say,
well, you know, you grab
the
crotch. There's not a lot of
no, yeah. But I think that they're beyond that. I think that she could just look at him like, I'm looking at you right now and just say, You know, I love you. I know that you're my friend and I adore you. You're my best friend. You're my best friend. But lately I've been feeling a little bit
beautiful.
Different.
Yeah,
I feel extra and I want to ask because I don't.
Are you feeling it too?
It doesn't even matter if you're feeling it. I'm feeling it. And I just want you to know that this is what I'm feeling. And
well, you want to ask what?
Do you feel anything? Do you think that there's any possibility? And see what happens. And then see what happens if you kiss. See what happens if you, you know.
I could almost see them.
I'm like excited for them. Kissing. Oh, I think it could be great.
I know.
And, you know, remember she was 14 when she came out. And she's 24. It's only been 10 years.
I know.
And I don't mean that doesn't mean she's a lesbian.
But
she's a lesbian.
Some people,
but right. I think that we evolve. Things change. And she's not going to stop being a lesbian. But I think that she's bisexual maybe, or she's you know, there's who knows, there's so many different things that could affect how we see.
But it is an awfully lovely love story.
It is,
like, just from that one letter.
It's beautiful. It is, it's beautiful.
He seems wonderful.
It's my best friend's wedding with a twist.
It is,
right?
I
in
love
a way
that movie
in a way it kind of is.
All right, you're up, doll.
Dear Agony, Auntie, and Uncle, a year ago or so, I found myself in what I thought was the worst situation I could ever be in when I had a weeks-long affair with my best friend's then-boyfriend. I won't go into the finer details of how it happened, save to say that we got caught up in our infatuation with one another, and things very quickly spiraled out of control before we came to our senses, ended it, and agreed to never say another word about it. Thankfully, we've been able to move past it and just get on with being friends, and my best friend never discovered what happened between us. Then a few weeks ago, he proposed to her, and honestly, I was overjoyed. First and foremost, because I want her to be happy, and also selfishly, because it made me think perhaps I hadn't ruined their relationship entirely. But now she's asked me to be her bride, her maid of honor. I want to say her best man.
Brutal.
And I just don't know how I can say yes.
Oh, my God.
But I also don't know how I could possibly say no without raising her suspicions.
Right.
I would feel absolutely awful standing there next to her as they get married, knowing deep down that what I've done. I would
brutal.
Die if she ever found out that I'd betrayed her trust like that.
Oh.
But I know she will be heartbroken if I turn down her request for better or worse. You know what? You say thank you so much for asking me to be your maid of honor. I'm honored, and yes, of course I will be your maid of honor. There's no question.
I agree.
You absolutely do it. And you know what? You're saying you would feel absolutely awful standing there next to her as they get married, but you didn't feel absolutely horrible and awful while the affair was going on. And I'm not judging you for that. I'm not judging her for the affair.
Right,
I'm not.
Right.
Things happen, and
yeah.
I'm not judging her for it
absolutely.
At all. That's already done.
Right.
And I really think that.
Right.
I think that what happened between them And I don't think that she needs to be suspicious of him, whether he's going to do it to her best friend again with somebody else. I think that sometimes things like that happen, and they maybe helped him realize, I'm really in love with this woman. I just had an affair with her friend, and I thought this was going to be something different, and it makes me really realize I am the luckiest man in the world, and I love my fiance, and I'm going to get married. I think she needs to let it go, and she needs to be there for her friend. If it ever comes out and she loses her friend, that's the price she paid for this. But don't risk her friend getting married to someone. I know there are people who are going to be listening to this say, why is she marrying? She shouldn't be marrying this guy. He had an affair with her best friend. It's not that simple. Things are not that simple. They're not that easy.
I agree with you. I really do, Faye.
Yeah.
To expound on it, or expound. Look, we're in our 50s. When you're in your 20s, early 30s, shit happens.
Yeah.
You have a lot of hormones controlling a lot of what you're doing. They quickly... I think they were controlled by a lot of the hormonal situation.
Well, and
like
also
pheromones.
We think that we know. We think we know
but they quickly,
so much.
But they quickly realized that they didn't want to hurt her. They quickly realized that while they were super attracted and it was probably...
And they were flirting,
like,
and it was
really
just,
hot.
Yeah.
They had moral and the ethic to say, we
gotta
have to stop this.
For sure.
And I'm with you. I feel like, suck it up, shut up.
Yeah.
Don't look at him. Don't flirty eye. Look at him. And it sounds like she's not gonna. Like,
no.
It was literally. Look, I had
she's
a situation
done with it.
Once I'm not proud of in my 20s. And it was one of those things where I just next day was like, this never freaking happened, and it never happened, and it was done. It can happen to anybody.
It can.
I'm not saying it's, for sure. it's the right thing.
No.
But it really can even happen to decent people that mean no harm.
Absolutely.
These people clearly
at any
mean
age.
No harm.
At any
exactly.
age. Yeah.
I have a friend who, I won't get into many details, back east, had a kind of like the love of his life, like that floated through, but they were never going to be.
Yeah.
He decided to marry someone else the night before his wedding. Shagged.
Right. It's just to be sure.
Told the wife.
To be, no.
Ruined it.
They didn't get
ruined
married?
It. They divorced. And that's where it's like, sometimes, look, this is going to sound terrible, but sometimes shut your mouth.
Yeah.
Secrets don't hurt people.
Right.
Most times they do.
Yeah.
But certain times it's like, just shut up.
Yeah.
Leave it in the vault.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yeah.
You're not in love. It's not like a
right.
love story that
no.
needs to, it just, it happened.
Yeah.
Move on. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. That, you know, the tricky part is it's her best friend, right? So say,
that is the tricky
say
part.
Say he said, that's he could good. Have that's said true. Something like, I have to tell you this. I slept with somebody. I've had this weird thing this whole week with a woman I've never met before, or right. I've never, just to let her know that he did it and it made me realize that I really, really love you. Of course, in a perfect
right.
world, that would be the thing to do.
Right.
But it isn't a perfect world and it doesn't work that way. And
it
sometimes it's better for him not to say something
correct.
Because he loves this woman and he knows
because certain things
he'll hurt her.
Really hurt
everyone
people.
Will get hurt. Yeah.
And it's a hurt that you can't come back from.
Yeah.
And that's what
I love
you know.
Being devil's advocate. And I just keep thinking somebody's listening to this and saying, well, that's the price they paid for doing it. And now everybody gets hurt.
No, you can't
hurt.
Be judgmental. Like,
I don't
people,
think so, right?
They're clearly, we're sorry for it.
Yeah.
You look, I mean, if you've lived, you've had, a, if you've
for
lived,
sure.
you've had a moment of just
complete for sure.
physical.
Yeah.
And that's one of the greatest things about life,
yeah.
right? The unfortunate part is that it was her best friend's boyfriend. But it even it's she doesn't sound to me like a girl, you know how some girls like to prey on them.
No, she's
this
not
is a,
this is not
this
drama.
Is a woman that is
this
just,
is not drama.
She found
this
herself
is
attracted to this
yeah.
guy, gave into it probably drunkenly, maybe
yeah.
not drunkenly, but gave into it.
Yeah.
And I just feel like for better or worse, listen, like Fabian said in the beginning, stand up with your girl, say nothing.
Yeah.
No googly eyes.
No.
Smile nicely, be your friend's friend.
For sure.
And put it behind you.
Yeah.
If he's willing to, then you can do it.
Yeah.
And just like my mistake years ago, like, you know,
yeah.
there was never talk of it again.
Yeah.
So
never
happens.
Talk about it again.
I know. Bury it. Listen, just a reminder, guys, please follow us on Instagram at pockets_podcast. Also, please rate and review our show. It really does help us to try and build our audience, because if we can build our audience, we can try to get sponsorship and maybe monetize this nonsense.
Like Gray Whale Gin. Gray Whale Gin.
And don't forget Hendrix.
And Hendrix.
Finally, Fabian, if you want to have us give any advice to you, please write in to pocketspod@gmail.com. We want you to know that we want to give pockets of wisdom to you always. This was really great. I'm glad that you were here with me. I think it was a pretty good show.
It was great.
We're going to have higher.
I needed this today. Thank
I know.
You for this.
That's the thing. This
I
is
needed
actually
it.
Turning out to be really good
yeah.
for us and hopefully for
you know what?
For
thank you for listening
too.
To our therapy session.
I know, right?
Because that's what this is.
Exactly.
We don't pay money to therapists. We are each other's
exactly.
therapists.
Thank you, Pockets
thank you.
Podcast.
And you're our therapist.
And thank you, listeners. We love you. Don't forget to write in and rate and review the show.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Bye, everybody.